The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, well, let's start talking while we're waiting for other guys to come. Any questions so far? So far, so good? No questions. So recall what we were talking in the last lecture. We introduced the Boltzmann equation and introduced the relaxation time approximation. So the Boltzmann equation written in the relaxation time approximation is df dt plus the velocity of the gradient of distribution function with respect to position variable and the force times the gradient of the distribution function with respect to the momentum variable. And in general, we discuss, because it's a one particle distribution function, so that's a scattering term. And in the last lecture, we discussed this scattering term if it's just a two particle collision, right? If it's only two particle collide with each other, that scattering term is already a very complicated line integral lasted with each other. And I said in very real situations, we could solve for this scattering integral exactly. So very often the approximation we use is the relaxation time approximation, f minus f0 divided by tau. And this tau is the relaxation time. Well, this f0 is the equilibrium distribution. And the equilibrium distribution, of course, it depends on what systems of particles you're dealing with, whether we're dealing with the molecules, or whether we're dealing with the photons, phonons, or dealing with the electrons. And so far, you have learned three distribution functions. One is for photon, and which is so F0 is for photon is Bose-Einstein distribution, is exponential h bar omega divided by kpt minus 1. That's the Bose-Einstein distribution. Or it is for electron Fermi-Dirac distribution, which is E minus mu kBT plus 1. That's a Fermi-Dirac. And this mu is the chemical potential. And so Fermi-Dirac distribution. Or if we deal with the gas molecules, we come to the classical region, and the distribution will be the Maxwell velocity distribution, which is a 2 pi m kbt, two-thirds, three-halves exponential minus, so it's a kinetic, if we just think kinetic energy only, so it's the m 2 kbt, one half mv squared, that's the energy. But this v, if the molecule is in motion, should be the so-called displaced Maxwellian. So it's the random velocity minus the average velocity square. So this is a mv square as a vector. I just simplified as a vector, simple form, notation there, right? So this is a displaced Maxwellian, Fermi-Dirac, Bose-Einstein. And in fact, if an electrical engineer, you deal with a high-speed electron motion, sometimes people also use the so-called displaced electron distribution, because when the average electron velocity is not zero, and this distribution can also be distorted to the something similar to the displaced Max-Weinian distribution. Or if you do Fourier transport, there is also a so-called displaced Bose-Einstein distribution. And this happens at a very low temperature when the Fourier could have so-called a Poiseuille flow, just like fluid mechanics problems. So we introduced the relaxation time approximation, and this relaxation time, there are various models for relaxation time. And we said that when the particle collide, they have to observe few rules. And one rule is the energy conservation. So EI, initial energy, must equal to the final energy. Right? And that's the initial energy of the two particles, the final energy of the two particles. So if, like a Fourier we discussed, when the two particles, Fourier merge into third, that's the initial two Fourier energy must equal to final Fourier energy. That's a simple energy conservation. So this is the energy conservation rule. And the other rule is the momentum conservation rule. And the momentum in quantum mechanics, the crystal momentum is hk1 plus hk2. And so if you have, that's the initial, let's say that's the two particle initial momentum, and it should equal to the final. If they after collide, you still got two particles, then it's HK3, HK4, or see, it depends on your rotation. Or I think I used HK1 prime plus HK2 prime. That's, and then if this happened to be outside the Brillouin zone, the K, then you can have the reciprocal lattice vector. And of course, again, for three Fourier, this could be just K3. That's they say when two Fourier combine into third. Actually, I was in Anaheim yesterday, even in the heat transfer community, there are people now trying to just exactly calculate that line integral, less than the integral numerically. They take the actual Fourier dispersion and obey search what are for each of the, because here this relaxation time could be depends on frequency, could depend on the, for this specific mode, for a Fourier or electron at a specific energy or wave vector, what are the other, all other possible electrons or Fourier that can satisfy the momentum and energy conservation rule that can collide with it? And that for that collision, we already have this scattering matrix. The Fermi's golden rule tells you the rate, but then say this those rules just further tell you what are those possible collisions. So there are actually people trying to do say full scale numerical search of the band structure satisfying these rules. And we're not going to talk much about how to calculate relaxation time. I give you for the case of Fourier, got Fourier scattering, Fourier impurity scattering, and we also said, for example, for the three Fourier process where I have one Fourier comes in with collide with another Fourier, so this is a H bar omega 1, this is H bar omega 2, and it form a third Fourier, H bar omega 3, then the energy conservation will tell me omega 1 equals plus omega 2 equals omega 3, and then omega 1 plus, K1, which is the momentum, K2 equals K3, and this K3 has to plus a reciprocal lattice vector. right? And if G is zero, that means third momentum, the momentum of the final phonon, is falling within the first Brillouin zone, because this is the phonon dispersion omega k. So if the third phonon is within the first Brillouin zone, then you this scattering process is called the normal scattering. So this is a normal scattering. And if G is not zero, it's the unclamped scattering. So this is a N process or U process. It's the U process, the unclamped scattering, that's really create resistance. Because the N normal process, the N process, the final third phonon still have the same equivalent momentum and energy as the first two, right? But see, with the U process, the third momentum, the final momentum, is no longer the sum of the first two because it's changed. So the direction completely changed. So this is really the source for the resistance. And this is the phonon scattering. And if you think about the electron, so what determines the electrical resistance? And that's the electron. What scatters the electron? So electron scattering can be scattered by other electrons. So electron-electron scattering. And the electron scattered by phonons. An electron scattered by phonon is the dominant one that determines the electrical resistance. Of course, also scattered by impurities. So, and all this depends on the range of temperature. When you go to very low temperature, phonons are cooled. So lattice do not vibrate much. The lattice do not vibrate much. It's then the phonon scattering is not strong. But the impurities are there. Impurity can dominate. So which mechanism really dominant the resistivity depends on, or thermal conductivity depends on, not on temperature. That's why very often people do experiment. They look at the temperature dependence and they will tell what's the mechanism. Through that temperature dependence study, what's the mechanism there? And we also, even in the first chapter, we said that the gas molecule, right? The collision of the gas molecule, the equivalent mean free path is a square root of 2 pi n d squared. D is the diameter of the molecules. So that's what we give the mean free path. And with the mean free path, you can say the mean free path is just the velocity, average velocity times relaxation time. So you can go to get how the relaxation time of the gas molecules. And the basic point is there people have done a lot of work to get how various relaxation time, phonon scattering, electron phonon scattering, depends on the energy. Because here we said the relaxation time depends on the energy. And most time people do not consider the dependence of relaxation time on direction, wave vector. And it's just to say because of complexity. Now with the relaxation time, maybe we can further think about what does it mean. So if you look at the relaxation time approximation, on the left-hand side, I said it's transport term. On the right-hand side, it's really the energy conversion, because it's the collision of the different carriers. That's the exchange of energy. You have photon come in, collision with the electrons, collision with the phonon, you convert that photon energy into either heat or into the electron energy, right? And I have a little bit more detailed treatment in Chapter 8 on this scattering. You can see for different scattering process. Sometimes relaxation time is not a good approximation. In fact, relaxation time is really valid mostly for the so-called elastic scattering process, where the energy, the molecules or the electrons, their energy doesn't change. But if you think about the electron scatter with the photon, they got to lose the energy to the photon. That's how when the current passes through a conductor, the conductor heats up, right? And so that's associated with the electron scatter with photon. That loss of energy from electron to photon if you do the more detailed scatter, say the collision integrator, you can actually get two terms. One is a more relaxation time approximation term, and the other is the electron photon energy loss term. So if you check Chapter 8, which I don't think I'm going to cover in detail. So Chapter 8, for example, in the first section, I derived for semiconductors certain kind of scattering. You can really express this as a relaxation term, time term, plus a really like an electron temperature minus photon temperature. So because of the temperature, small temperature difference between electron photon, that lets the electron dump its energy to the photon system. And but then I again, this is Chapter 8. I gave you numbers. It turns out that if you do this estimation, how much electron photon temperature difference in a conductor, that's of the order 10 to the minus, 10 to the minus 8, or very small temperature difference between electron photon. So normally, you approximate them as the same temperature. But then, if you look at the contemporary electronic device, the electrons can be heated up to several thousand degrees in a device. That's the in MOSFET, the computer circuits, and their calculation. People do the equivalent temperature of the electrons, several thousand degrees. The photons are still pretty much 100 degrees, or that's a typical device temperature. So in those cases, you have to be more careful on the separating the electron photon, direct energy exchange term. But most of the time, we'll be using the relaxation time approximation. And in a way, you can think of this as a mature. So if you want to do research, you should look more into those, the so-called hot electron effect in the 80s, electric engineers still study a lot. And now what I'm going to do is to use the relaxation time approximation and derive all the classical laws that you have learned. But before that, let's say, just to give a further explanation of relaxation time, what it means. If you look at the left-hand side, the first term is the time derivative of distribution function. Second term is space. And the third term on the left-hand side is momentum derivative. So if there's no space inhomogeneity, no momentum inhomogeneity, you can say that the under relaxation time approximation, what you have is really df dt equals f minus 0 divided by tau, if there's no spatial inhomogeneity, right? So what this tells you is the f minus f0, a solution will be time history of the distribution function. So relaxation time just tells you if there's a disturbance of the system, how long it takes for the system to recover to equilibrium, right? And now I'm going to do a little bit more math, because I do want to show you how you can get the classical laws from the relaxation time approximation. And let me start with my favorite, the Fourier law, because I do heat transfer, but I'm going to show Newton shear stress law, Ohm's law, and generalize Ohm's law to thermoelectricity. So let's do the relaxation time. I want to solve the equation, and dF dt plus V delta R F plus F delta F equals minus F zero tau. And this F is a function, that's the Lambert density of the particles at one specific quantum state, specific location, right? So R, and if you think of, say, using the momentum, or we could also use R, or V vector, or velocity, right? So they're different, depends on exactly you're dealing with quantum, you like to use V vector. And if you're dealing with continuum, you probably would like to use the velocity. And this delta PF really means DF DPX in the PX direction, DF DPY in the PY direction. So you could write this as should equal to, if you want to use the wave vector, then it's H bar delta K F, right? Because H times K is gives you momentum. So you can change this PX as HKX. Or you can change that P equals MVX. So you get an extra M. So this also equal to M delta VF. So there are different ways to write it. Depends on what variables you take. Okay. And now I want to solve the equation. What I want to solve is the F, the actual non-equilibrium case. Because when there is transport, the F is now longer, same as the equilibrium. With F zero, there's no transport. The whole system, if the distribution is F zero, there's no transport. Equilibrium situation, right? And so what I can do is, I want to say that the transport create only a small deviation. I can do in more rigorous way. I can do perturbation theory, right? But I'm not going to do that. Put that say rigor here. I just want to say, let me assume the F minus F zero. This F zero is equilibrium. F is the actual. I want to assume that this is a much smaller than F itself. So what I mean is the deviation from equilibrium is small compared to the equilibrium, right? So this is of the same order of zero. So what I say, the type of situation now I'm considering is that the transport create a long equilibrium, but that deviation from the equilibrium is small. And with this, I can just substitute this back into the using F equals G plus F0 and replace dF dt by dF0 dt plus dG dt plus V. Here I have, as I said, a little bit more mass, F0. I just want to write down every term here so you can say I'm dropping what terms. And because once you go to nano, some of these terms cannot be dropped. Okay? I'm going to show the classical laws first. So I'm going to drop a lot of these terms. But let me write that all every term. And so now I'm going to use F divided by M. So I'm going to use V. As I said, it really depends on what variables you're dealing with. So you should be feeling comfortable switching those different variables. Right? So as I assumed here, you can see every term is just a transformation. Rather than using F, I'm using G and F0. So there's no approximation in this step. Right? And now I'm going to use my condition. If G is much smaller than F0, then you can say delta R G will be much smaller than delta R F0. So I can drop this term. Right? Because G is much smaller than F0. So compare this term to this term. It's much smaller. And similarly, this term is much smaller. Right? And this term is much smaller. Yes? Yeah.
It doesn't guarantee that the gradient is smaller or larger than the other term, does it?
You're right. Okay. So I'm not doing rigorous math. Okay. I can do the perturbation and just to see which is the first term, and that can show you, say, better, more, but I'm skipping all that. Okay. Just to take it, I say this term is much smaller than that. So that's one approximation. I'm dropping all this higher order term. And I'm also going to drop F0 dt. And there I'm invoking one more assumption. That is the time scale of the process I'm dealing with. The time scale is much larger than tau. So if the time scale is much larger than tau df0 dt, then is F0 of the order of time I'm dealing with, and that's much smaller than the dg d tau. So I will be dropping this term as well. So this means the diffusion theory can only apply to relatively slow process, to processes that's much slower than the relaxation time, right? So I'm making very sure every step I'm making assumption, and those assumptions, once you go to very fast process, once you go to very small scale, they may not be valid. But if if you take all this assumption, then I have then V0, V dot RF0. That's the license, because F0 is more like an equilibrium distribution. I assume I know it. Okay, I assume I know what's the equilibrium, and this F M really should be the dot product because the two vectors. So the vector V F zero equals F. Let me write the back because G is F minus F zero, so I can express at the end, the true distribution function F itself. So here, so from this, I have F then equals F0 minus, I just solve this equation, tau V dot R F0 plus F M dot V F0. So this is my solution for the long equilibrium distribution function F. And from this solution, you can go to calculate heat flux, momentum flux, charge flux. So you can get all the flux quantity that you're interested in. Momentum flux gives you shear stress. Heat flux gives you the heat transfer rate. So let's see whether I can get those familiar laws or not. And I'm going to do first the heat transfer. And let me consider just I have a heat flow in the x direction, I simplify, I want to do a simpler math. You can do general way. But let's say I have heat transfer in the x direction. That means my temperature is a function of x only. Right? And I want to say the total heat transfer for, in the x direction. So I do Q at any point. Okay? Well, the total heat transfer is then the summation of all the modes, Kx, Ky, Kz, if this is a Folon. Folon, each mode, quantum mechanical mode, is represented by a set of Kx, Ky, Kz. Right? And each mode, what's the energy of each mode? H bar omega. Nothing depends on space, right? It's interesting to see where the space dt dx comes from at the end. So each mode, how many Folon I have? That's here. F. The long equilibrium. So it's not F0. It's the F gives me the each quantum mechanical mode, because this is a function of R and Kx, Ky, Kz. So this is the F. So that's how much energy per mode, and summing up all the modes. Right? Now, I want the heat flux, the rate of going in x direction. So what I do is I multiply by the Vx. Right? So this is the Folon going in the x direction, Vx. And this is going, summing up all possible. It's a little bit different than I use the Landau formulas in chapter 5. Now, I want to recall when I do chapter 5, I say I want to calculate heat transfer or charge transfer between 2 points. What I did? I did the 0.1 to 0.2, what's the transmissivity? And then when I sum up from 0.1 to 0.2, then the Kx must be larger than 0, because that's represented going really in this direction. And then from the reverse, I do summation, I do Kx smaller than 0, right? The difference of the two flux, that's what I did when I do Landau formula. And now I'm just doing every point, point-wise. I sum all direction, Kx, Ky, Kz. So in a sense, when I allow all every possible value, I know I'm really allowing locally whatever direction I sum up, the let difference gave me what's in the x direction. Right? And I'm not doing a transmissivity anymore. I'm doing 1 point. And whatever transmission is all really included in this long equilibrium distribution. So equivalent is included. You can make really a one-to-one correspondence. But just at least in the way I'm writing it, there's a difference between Landau and what I'm doing here. So this is just a starting. You can say this does not depend on x. Vx is the group velocity. The group velocity, Vx, is really dE dKx. That's the how we calculate group velocity. Right? So given energy dispersion, it doesn't depend on x. It doesn't depend on space either. The true really dependence on space comes from this distribution function. Okay? And now let's continue. So from this summation, if I do fold on there three polarizations, I sum up polarization, and you do electromagnetic wave, or that's similar, right? Of electrons. So when I do chapter 4 or chapter 5, I convert this summation into integration. That's what I've been doing, and that's where I use often this concept of density of states. Right? But again, the density of states is just a mathematical convenience. And if you know the principle, you say kx, ky, kz. I want to, you know, the really just simply. So kx, remember, equals 2 pi divided by L, 4 pi divided by L, plus minus all those values, right? And so whatever function of that summation inside, if I just do that summation, means this is a kx1, kx2, I just sum up these discrete values. That's what that summation means. Whatever the inside function, I pick up a discrete point, I put them together. But the way of making it easier rather than do discrete sum is I transform into integration. If you are elementary school student, summation is easier. College student, integration is easier, right? And so here, rather than, so when I want to calculate this value, when I do the integration, I really calculate this area. Then I divide by the length of this area, that gives me the average height. So that's the conversion. So I do the P, I don't change. Kx, because the length per interval is 2 pi divided by L, so that's 2 pi divided by L cubic. And then here I have really Kx, all the Kx values, so it will be from minus, allowable, so the first Brillouin zone, and whatever. It's a triple integral rather than triple summation. So h bar omega f vx. So now I write it as dkx, dky, dkz. Right? I change that summation into an integration. I now say dkx, dky, dkz is treated as a continuum, rather discrete numbers. Right? That's the first step I do. Now, if you do specific heat, remember in chapter 4, that gives you the total energy, density, energy, total energy of the system, right? Here it's giving a flux. So in chapter 4, what we did is we convert this into dkx, dky, dkz, divided by dE times dE. This, and this together give me the density of states. Right? Because that's the what we did in chapter 4. So if I do that way, I would convert. I'm not going to do exactly that way. I'm just reminding you, if you follow that, what do you have? If you think about the energy density, then it's H bar omega F D omega, d omega. Rather than do dE, you do d omega, because now you're dealing with mostly omega for Fourier, not dealing with energy. E equals h bar omega. It's just simple substitution, right? So this will give you the energy density of Fourier. But now when I do heat flux, I have Vx. That's a complication. Vx is only in specific direction. And this one is already considered all directions already. You're not consistent. I have to do it more consistently when I do this conversion. And this the way to think about this, dkx, dky, dkz is a Cartesian coordinate. I change into spherical coordinate. When I do spherical coordinate, so dkx, dky, dkz, let me just repeat this is the first 2 pi L cubic, and H bar omega F Vx. So I do spherical coordinate will be K is radius, theta phi, right? That's the corresponding variable in spherical coordinate. And that would be giving me K square sine theta d phi dk. That's the volume in spherical coordinate, right? A differential volume. Follow me? Spherical coordinates. So here is kx, kx, ky, kz, and this is my k, and the angle typically, this is theta, and this is phi. Right? Yes? I will be having a bit easier life. Thank you. Two pi, no, this doesn't change. I'm only dkx, dky, dkz. I'm not changing anything. I'm changing into a spherical coordinate, the volume in spheres. Okay? So let me actually use this as a kx, this as a ky, this as a kz. I'm always doing right-hand rule. Then, I'm sorry, okay, let me redraw this. Because the kx for this space, so it really depends on how you choose your coordinate system. You sit there, you choose different coordinate system, at the end you'll get same results. I mean, say which direction I have kx, then ky, kz, this will be my phi, this will be theta direction. Okay, so this is a change in dkx, dky, dkz into theta phi k. That means, what's the integration? If I have this angle here, phi is the azimuthal, theta is the polar, what's the integration limit for theta phi? To cover the whole space. Two pi is for what? Phi. Because phi is 2 pi. Theta? Zero? That's when the k is here. And going back to the other side, it's pi. That's the integration limit. Okay? So if remember that I didn't write it down. We'll write it out specifically after we have to do that integration. So now I have one step, and I can then do the, if you remember, when we do the density of states, what we really is, because we said that everything is isotropic, we do this is dE, and then 2 pi L cubic sum all the polarization. That is my density of states. Remember that? Because everything is isotropic, so I don't do theta phi. The whole spherical shell volume is 4 pi r squared dr, 4 pi k squared dk. The difference is now I'm considering theta phi because this one will depend on the angle. Right? So you can see if the crystal is an isotropic crystal, the difference of this k squared dk, I can really k squared dk, so the difference is really 4 pi. Density of states 4 pi. So that's why if you read my book, I think in chapter 5 or chapter 4, I define this differential density of the states. So in each specific direction, what's the density of states? And so if I use this notation we have, what do we really get? continue that integral here. And I have 2 pi, that's d phi, 0 to pi, that's d theta, and then 0 to whatever omega maximum, because now I'm going to convert this into this one, I'm going to convert into d omega. So you can see this conversion is you can just do by d omega times d omega. And this d omega k squared dk divided by this, sum by that, is my density of states divided by 4 pi. So I have h bar omega f and 4 pi density of states omega d omega. Oh, Vx. Yes, thank you. Somewhere I have sine theta d omega. Right? So the really, the if the crystal is isotropic, then the difference is I'm using in that specific direction the density of states is the normal density of state divided by 4 pi, because 4 pi is the solid angle of the whole space. So that's in per unit solid angle direction, that's the density of states. But this is something I really want you to see there and figure out, do yourself. And you bet, next week when I give a take-home exam, there will be a problem on this. Okay? And so this is the what I do in transformation. And my next step is I haven't even plugged in the solution for F yet. Right? F. My next step is plug in the F and carry out the integration. So let me do it. So the for heat conduction, right, this is a more general expression. For heat conduction by Foulon, there's no external force on the particle. The force must be external force. So there's no external force on the particle Foulon. This term drops out. And I just have this term, and I'm considering one dimensional. So let me write down F, what F should be. F should be F0 minus tau, and that V and dr df0. What is that? Look at, if I consider Bose-Einstein for Foulons, that's F0, right? Where is my R would get into it? Temperature. That's where this T is a function of X, right? So df0 dr is really df0 dx. It's one-dimensional. If it's two-dimensional, you have to do df partial dx, df partial dy. Right? So here I have really this two vector is dvx, df, dx. I can write dt, dt, dx. Oh, I'm sorry, df0 dt. I'm using chain rule, right? Because f0 is a function of omega t, but I want to find df0 dx. So it's d omega df0 dt dt dx. You see it? So that's my solution for the distribution function, and I plug in there. So you plug in, and then you carry out this integration. And let's do that. So what I have then is 0 to pi d phi, 0 pi d theta, vx 0 to maximum of Foulon frequency, h omega d divided by 4 pi, d omega divided by 4 pi, f0 minus tau vx df0, dt, dt, dx, sine theta, d omega. So this is my, after I substitute in, right? Now what I'm going to show you is df0 term drops out. Why it drops out? Sine theta integration from 0 to pi is what? You see, if I do the first sine theta f0, d theta 0 to pi, what is it? Sine theta is cosine theta. Cosine theta 0 to pi? 0. 2? Then I made some mistake. Huh? Vx. Vx. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Here, I forgot the Vx. Vx have to convert in theta. That's why we've been keeping theta. Okay. Vx is the velocity, random velocity of the particle at that location. So Vx is a V cosine theta, right? So it's a V cosine theta, and then sine theta, cosine theta. So if you check this, 0 to pi, cosine theta, sine theta, d theta, that should equal to 0, right? Am I right? Okay. It's a square. 1 minus 1. So F0 contribution to the flux is 0. That's what they expect. The equilibrium term do not contribute the lead flux. And this is because at that point, if this is the equilibrium distribution, that means there's equal amount of particle going forward and going backwards. So the lead flux is 0 due to that equilibrium term. It's really this deviation from equilibrium that's driving your flux. Okay? So the deviation from equilibrium, here I got V cosine theta again. Right? I have cosine theta squared sine theta d theta. Phi, for this specific problem, that's why I said, you can see, that's why I switch my kx in the same direction as x, so I have theta, cosine theta, in the x direction. You can do the other coordinate, you get the same results, it's just a different kind of math. So phi, there's no term on phi, so I have 2 pi here. And now I get this term 0 pi cosine theta squared sine theta d theta, right? That's the cosine theta squared sine theta d theta 0 to pi. Tell me what's this number? One-third. Two-thirds. One-third cosine theta, one-third cos is minus one-third cosine theta cubic 0 pi. So I mean to ask after you put the pi to 0, two-thirds. So it's plus two-thirds, right? It's plus two-thirds. Here I got a 2 pi. So it's a 4 pi divided by 3 plus. And I get a minus sign here, right? So what I have is then 3, 4 pi, and this 4 pi actually cancel this 4 pi. So there's another 4 pi, and then I have 0 omega maximum and tau v squared df0 dt, and density of states omega, h bar omega, d omega. And then I put the dt dx out because it doesn't depend on frequency. Right? dt dx out. Have minus sign here. Right? So this will give me what? Doesn't this look like Fourier law? Huh? So I write it as minus one-third dt dx. So 0 omega maximum h bar omega, that's the energy, and tau v squared df0 dt, density of state d omega d omega. So this is my first term, and then have dt dx. So Fourier law tells me Q equals a constant times dt dx. A constant is the thermal conductivity. I made one fudging factor here. At least I wasn't paying attention. Here I drew the capital Q, and here I have L. I didn't go back and divide per unit volume. Right? Really, you should divide this L back to here. That's why when I calculated, I said I like to use per unit volume density of states. It's really, that will give you the small Q as a heat flux. And you go to check the unit is watt meter square. So after divided by that per unit volume, you get your flux, true flux. Okay? So this is your thermal conductivity. And remember that in chapter 1, we did a kinetic theory on thermal conductivity. Kinetic theory on thermal conductivity tells me that thermal conductivity is one-third C V gamma. C is specific heat speed times mean free path. And you can see here there's a similarity. K equals one-third 0 to omega maximum and tau V squared H bar omega df dt density of states d omega. What is this? This is H bar omega density of states times F d dt. This is a per frequency interval how much energy is, right? Lambda df0 is the equilibrium, right? So it's like a per frequency interval, what's the specific heat? The frequency dependent specific heat. And then you integrate all everything. So what you have here is one third zero omega maximum tau v squared c omega d omega. And now you look at the Fourier dispersion. Right? Omega what depends on the speed. V depends on speed because that's the group velocity. Right? So V depends on frequency, specifically it depends on frequency, and tau could also depend on frequency. So the difference is here is a more simplification, just say independent frequency. Here is consider all the frequency dependence. Now if you go to do this integral, using people gave approximated expression for the relaxation time, you find out this is the thermal conductivity curve typical for lattice thermal conductivity, specific heat, temperature. And this high temperature means room temperature, comparable to the Debye temperature region. It's the Fourier scattering. And that is typically 1 over temperature. So as you go to higher temperature range, your thermal conductivity drop, inverse proportional to temperature. That's a theory. But most of the time, it's one temperature nth power, with that n is 1 to 1.5. It's faster than theory. There's still a debate what's going on there. And then here is impurity. And this region is a boundary. When boundary scattering is dominant, this is essentially this region is like a specific heat. So it's omega, no, temperature third power. At low temperature, the specific heat is proportional to the third power. So this is the boundary scattering region, impurity scattering, Fulan-Fulan scattering region. That's a typical curve in crystals. Amorphous material is a different shape. It has a region where it's a flat. That's about 10 to 20 Kelvin. Here, this peak is typically in bulk material, is about 10 to 20 Kelvin. That depends on how large is your specimen. So when you go to very low temperature, the mean free pass could be same, larger than your size of a specimen. So even this size effect, people started in 1920s. Okay? It's just a nano becomes important at room temperature. So nano, this peak will shift to room temperature, or there's no peak. Amorphous material doesn't have that peak either, and it's more going up because it doesn't have this extended states. So that's the thermal conductivity, Fourier law. So you see that we derive Fourier law. Let's look at the Lewton shear stress law. The philosophy is similar. That's why I go through at least one derivation in this lecture relatively carefully. And now to do the Lewton shear stress law, again, we need to express the shear stress in terms of the microscopic quantity. You can see when I do the heat flux, I just say microscopically, each quantum state, this much energy, this much particle, how fast they move, right? And I do heat shear stress, I have the same thing. I need to express the shear stress in terms of the microscopic quantity. So I want to look at a flow, so shear stress, so I have velocity, and this is the y direction, this is the x direction. Let me just see what velocity is a function of y. That's like when you consider a coed flow, when one plate is moving, your velocity is a function of y, linear velocity, or Poisson flow, when your pressure drive flows through, right? And in this case, again, I have my distribution function determined, let's say, here. That's my general distribution function. And I need to express shear stress in terms of microscopic quantity. So that's the Newton's second law. It's the rate of momentum change equals the force. So a molecule is moving in the x direction. That's the momentum is mvx, right? So the shear is because it's moving not only in x direction, it's also go across in the y direction. So when I look at the shear stress in the tau xy, that means in the x constant y plane, in the x direction. That's the force, shear stress. So that is really, this is the momentum, and this is the rate of momentum moving across that plane. And then, per unit volume, how many particles you have. And I got to sum up all possible directions, because there are molecules going this way, molecules go in all directions. I count all possibility to get the net flux of the molecules going across constant y-plane. that will give me tau xy equals I sum up. Now I do directly do integration because I'm doing a continuum. I'm using the displaced Boltzmann distribution that's already dvx, dvy, dvz. This distribution is per dvx, dvy, dvz. So I'm already using continuum. You can go back to do quantum particles, just like a box, say particle in box. You can start from there, and you get the same results. So here, I have to sum up from mass to infinite to plus infinite for dvx, same dvy, dvz. So this is the rate and dvx, dvy, dvz. This will count all possible directions, the net flux going across the plane at constant y and for the force in the x direction. I'm thinking whether I'm the momentum is the my, the force. So if I use the Newton's shear stress law, Newton's second law, right? It's the rate of momentum change. Should be mvy times vx, or is mvx is the momentum? The rate of the momentum change. Yeah, I'm considering the rate of the net rate of momentum change in the x direction. So that should be the force in the x direction. So tau xy. So this is the momentum. And this is due to the rate of loss either going up, going down. I'm summing up all directions. And this is a per unit volume, how many particles. Okay? Right? So once you have the microscopic expression, you do the same thing. You substitute the distribution function we have here. So you let's see what is F. Okay? And F now... you can say, again, I don't have, you see, I have a pressure. That's a force acting on each particle. But what is pressure? Pressure, again, is the normal momentum, right? So there is not a direct force pushing the particle. It's really the momentum in the x direction or y direction that gives the pressure. So there's no force acting on individual particles. Right? And this term drops out.
Which case is that?
What term? Where is the force? Huh? No, electrons. You have electric field. Then you got the force really acting on the electron. Right? So I have force, then... F0, that F0 is here. That's my first term. And tau and V dot R. V, I could write VXI plus VYJ plus VZK. If you're not comfortable, you can do the exact dot product. And DF here, DF0, dr, that really is df0 dx I df0 dy j df0 dk k dzk, right? That's I'm just writing terms carefully out. I'm neglecting gravity, right? I'm deriving shear stress law. Newton shear stress law. Did you see gravity in the Newton shear stress law? But if you have body, really body force, maybe you can start from here and see whether you can incorporate into it. And now the F0. F0 here, velocity, this is random velocity. This is the average velocity. Average velocity, this is only... so. In the x direction, but it's a function of y. If I write the F0 out, it's n m 2 pi k t 2/3 exponential minus m vx minus u y square. I'm having too many bracket. Vx plus vy square plus vz square divided by 2kbt. I just want you to see here is my uy. Right? Here is uy. So when I do df0 dx, this one, I don't have that term. Nothing depends on x. Df0 dy I should keep. Df0 drops out. So that also means I should have vy times this term. Right? And df0 dy is really df0 dvx. So I can write this one as f0 minus tau vy df0 dvx and du dy. Okay. You say, why you write df0 dvx? It's just because I want to save my writing the whole thing out. This one, when I say df0 du, I can write same as df0 dvx du dy. Or I write df0 du du dy. I'm just using chain rule. But because vx and u is equal position, so either I do df dvx or df du is the same mathematically. Just, okay? Now shake your head. Df du. Do the same thing. Okay? Equivalent, yes? Huh? Vx is not. But I'm doing df dy. And only u depends on, it's the average velocity depends on y. Right? I'm going to integrate the Vx from 0 to minus infinite to plus infinite. Df dx. Because there's nothing depends on x. I didn't say Vx depends. V is a variable in momentum space. V is an independent variable. K is an independent variable. It's the average velocity depends on x. The average temperature depends on x. Right? That's a microscopic measurable quantity. V, K, P, those are my X. These are my independent variable. It's independent of K, X, Y, Z. Right? Okay? So, this is my expression. You substitute this. You'll see you get a du dy. That's already your Newton shear stress norm. Right? Again, the F0 term drops out. Equilibrium term doesn't contribute to your distribution, say the net shear stress. So do this substitution in and carry out the integration. I'm not going to carry out here, and I trust that you can sit there and figure it out. It's not straightforward, but it's just a mathematics integration. So let me give you the suppose you substitute the in there. Did you all say you will get the Newton shear stress law from there? So what you will say is you will find out the tau xy equals mu du dy. Because here du dy. And you say, well, where is this u? Okay, you have a u here. You go to do integration, it will drop out. Okay. And but in fact, if you do a regress there, if you go to kinetic theory, and they will put say they really when they calculate shear stress, they already put a Vx minus u. I myself am not quite sure whether you need to do that. Okay. At least say I can derive everything without going doing that step. So I'm not going to deliberate on whether which one is the best. And so this mu, what's that mu value? Because basically this also gave you the way to calculate all the coefficients, right? So this mu, what you find out is n tau kBT. So the number density, relaxation time, kB, Boltzmann constant. Now when I do this, I'm making assumptions. I'm making assumption that temperature is constant, density is constant. Right? If temperature and density are not constant, you take your into consideration. You can derive the couple, that's really couple the mass and momentum transport. If you study heat transfer before, you know there's this so-called double diffusion, right? So heat transfer, heat flux will create a mass flux. That's where you can derive all those expressions. Okay? So I'm only doing this one. If this depends on temperature also, could be function of x, y. You can do that, include everything, you'll find all the terms. And in fact, I'm going to do that for electricity. I'm not going to do it for the molecules. Let's say the electricity. And you can also do the thermal conduction, right? You can do heat conduction for gas molecules. Again, you do the same thing, the energy. It's the energy, it's not the momentum when you do heat conduction. And then you find out the thermal conductivity of if you do the heat conduction is 2 kB divided by m and n tau kBT. Related to viscosity. And that relation all come from, they all depends on the same collision frequency. So viscosity, thermal conductivity are related. Right? So viscosity, you can say this is 52 kbm times viscosity. A lot of those coefficients have relation like this. And they all come from the same source. That's because. Okay? You see that once you know the basics, you see the connection there. So, let me quickly, I'll come back to this. So what we want to do next is electricity. So Ohm's law. And thermoelectric effect. So, if we do charge, again, we can go to calculate the current flux, right? I want to calculate the current density flow across the conductor. So here, I will replace H omega by E. That's the charge carried by a positive charge. So I should do negative E. That's the per electron charge. Right? Velocity is the same. It's just the F are different. F are different also through F0. Right? If I do charge, F0 is exponential E minus mu kBT plus 1. So I have to come back to the Fermi-Dirac distribution. And if there is a charge, there is an electric field, and you have an electron here, let's say per unit charge, let's use a Q per unit charge. The electron is very troublesome because it's a negative E. You have to carry a negative sign there. If I have an electric field, what's the force on the... The force is F equals QE. Right? Well, if I do the electron, it's negative. Force equals QE. Same direction if it's positive. As a field. So I would have to deal with this term as well as this term. Okay? The chemical potential. And so in the next lecture, I'm going to deal with mu temperature as well as the force. Three terms together. And then you will see that when they couple, if they don't couple, constant temperature case, you get the Ohm's law. When you couple, you get the thermoelectric, so you generate a temperature or generate the voltage. That's the thermocouple when you use thermocouple to do experiment. Okay. And one survey. Next Monday, I'm going to give a take-home exam. And how many of you really have to leave school? Because I'm thinking I should have really have the back on Wednesday class so you can have a Thanksgiving. Or you actually prefer not to have a Thanksgiving and do it the week after. I mean, coming back and give it back to me. I tend to just say Wednesday 2:30, you give back the exam. So you have 2 days, from Monday to Tuesday. Otherwise, I know when you take it home, you can spend a week just say, oh, there's a little bit there. Most of the, my feeling is you probably don't want to do it. Friday, I can give you this Friday and make the deal next Wednesday by 2:30. So if you have to travel, you email, but by 2:30. So you got to find the time to send in before that. Turn to Alvin. Law class, so that's your treat. Suppose you take an exam there, because I'm traveling. Okay. Huh? Monday, there's a guest lecture on thermoelectric, quantum structure in thermoelectrics. Next lecture, I'm going to tell you bulk thermoelectrics. Deal? Okay. Friday, I'm going to email the problem, the end of the day. Okay. It comes to next lecture, the end of next lecture.